What's up, guys? Jackson Johnson here from the Jackson Johnson Podcast. In today's podcast, we are lucky enough to have Devin Kelly, a practitioner in movement and mindfulness, and Ian, who owns Nibbana Strength here in Bali, which is going to be one of my favorite gyms on the planet. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Let's dive in. So to bring you up to speed, I've just asked Devin how he got involved in such a high level of movement and mindset.
Okay, so yeah, what I do is I coach or teach movement, and an additional practice that's kind of like a self-psychology practice that I call narrative excavation. So I split my time between these two teaching practices, and that and personal practice, that's kind of what I spend most of my time doing. So I would call myself a coach. Originally from the US, lived in China for the last 4.5 years. And now I'm loosely based in Bali.
How did you get yourself from Western life to China?
It was actually an Instagram opportunity. Somebody contacted me from Shanghai. They had a yoga studio in Shanghai and they wanted me to come and teach full time. So I wanted to see Japan actually originally. I didn't even want to go to China that much. But I took the opportunity because I thought it would kind of open up Asia. And ended up signing a contract, which was messy business, and broke the contract, went on with multiple other companies, and then eventually became freelance in China. It was originally Instagram, which is ironic because Instagram is blocked in China.
Which is very strange, isn't it? Yeah, they have their own social media platform.
I think there's a big appeal to Japan. Like, I also was like, wanted to first go to Japan, mm-hmm. and then ended up deciding on Korea. So Asia's got a really nice draw to it.
And Ian, you're from America as well.
Yeah, man.
Where were you born and how did you get yourself to Bali?
I'm originally from like a military family. So I was born in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and I lived there for a total of 3 months of my life. And then,
pretty close to my hometown. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I'm also half Korean. So we moved to Korea for 4 years. After that, it was in order: Florida, Germany, Washington State, Indiana. Or no, sorry, Texas, and then Indiana, and then I moved back to Korea.
Was your father working with the government, or
he was in the Air Force?
The Air Force. Yeah.
So 20 years Air Force, just a lot of moving, which I think. You know, initially going through that process as a kid, like, we don't like to be put in like uncomfortable situations. So like the idea of like always having to move and always having to adapt to every new situation you get into, it kind of, you know, actually now you're looking back, it's actually a really cool experience, and having that ability to go into new situations and even socially being able to adapt with a little bit more ease. It's funny how like something like that kind of fits into a lot of our practice and what we really kind of preach now, both Devin and I in our practice.
How did you and Devin first get a hold of each other, and how did it? Because Devin's doing an event, or he's done an event at Nirvana. Is that correct? How did that come apart?
Well, we had this event in Bali last year called The Gathering, which was a gathering of teachers from, all bunch of different places over the world. And we came together as movement practitioners and teachers to kind of mutually share with each other, teach each other classes. It's like, you know, none of us were paying for the event except for the travel and living expenses. So it was kind of agreed that we were all pretty similar level coaches. And so during that event, we had scheduled some classes at Nirvana because we heard it was a great space. And they have recovery tools there as well. So like, we wanted to try the ice bath. We did some Wim Hof breathing as well. And we wanted to do some of our gymnastics basics classes there. So yeah, and that's originally how we met. We went in for some classes and we just got to talking. And I think it was like, we had our first discussion around like muscle ups or something.
Yeah.
We were like talking muscle up theory and like how to teach beginners muscle ups.
Yeah.
And
it's definitely one of the most kind of asked Cali YouTube type of videos. It's like every young guy wants like, how do I do a muscle up?
And what was kind of interesting about that conversation, it wasn't really the subject. I mean, I think neither of us were really working on muscle ups at the time, but it was more like, you know, we kind of understood that the way we were both talking about the subject was like we were interested in teaching on a deeper level and methodology on a deeper level. So we just kind of hit it off, and then we're like, we need to work together, you know?
And I think, you can have a 30-second discussion with Devin, and you can kind of get a really good understanding of, not everything that he does or has to offer, but the how much he thinks about everything on a much deeper level than just saying, like, all right, man, you got to do step 1, 2, 3, and, like, that's it. I think to be able to, like, fully appreciate the movement and actually have, like, a really good understanding of, like, what actually goes through the process of physical development. And I think every high-level professional, no matter what the industry is, like, you got to break stuff down and approach things in a very unique way that that takes you to that next level, that separates you from the average coach, average trainer, because there's definitely a lot of average out there.
Yeah, with a lot of listeners may not be coming from, you know, your channels or people who actually know you. I want to know from, you know, both of you, firstly starting with Devin, like, what is really your strengths and what are you known for at the moment? I know you explain what you do as a coach, but if someone was to, like, click onto your Instagram, like, what would they see when they first see your page?
Well, what they would see is a lot of movement. They would, at first, you know, when they scroll through it, now it's mostly candid videos of my practice. So they would see immediately, like, you know, some strength skills, some mobility, you know, benchmarks, things like this. They'd also see photos of me teaching and coaching events. But what's going on, even just, you know, slightly under that surface, if you read any of my captions, is what I'm offering, I think, that's different from other coaches in my field is, I would say, a more cerebral and abstract approach to learning principles. Like, so whatever I'm teaching, I'm trying to impart insights about how we learn and how we develop as humans through these practices. The movement that you see on my page, like the physical movement skills and strength and mobility, is all just an excuse, and it's a medium through which I'm helping people to explore deeper learning principles.
So the movement is kind of like, not just to catch people's attention, but in a broad way, it's like that, you know, build an audience. But then you want to take them on a deeper level, and you want them to understand that the movement comes from the mind first.
Mm.
And if the mind's not, like, interested in the movement, then you're not going to be able to, like, get your head to your toe. Like, I've seen a video just recently where Devin literally has his head on his toe, and the hamstring in the back is at this full stretch. And you're strong in the movement as well. It's not like, you know, you meet some people that have been dancers or whatnot, particularly just someone I met at the Active Escapes on the weekend. She was in the Circus Delay, and she's super mobile. She can do the most amazing things, but she actually had trouble trying to press out of, like, a crow into a handstand, because she doesn't have the strength, but she has the mobility. And she says that the first thing she loses when she stops training properly is the strength. But for me, I lose the flexibility because my background comes from just, like, bodybuilding and strength. So I was super interested, like, meeting Ian and going to Nirvana, like, I think a year or two ago. I think it was only last year that I went in there. So while we're on that subject, like, Ian, if someone was to, you know, was to meet you or to see your page, like, you know, what do you do and what would someone see?
Yeah, I mean, I always say a lot of our page is really focused on, you know, everything that our facility has to offer, whether it be, like, videos of the workshops or videos of classes, or sometimes I think as a business is a little bit more abstract, and we just have so many different things that we're trying to market, but we want to market it specifically as a destination for people to get a full experience of what a very healthy and very progressive lifestyle can be with regards to, like, creating behavioral changes. But bringing in, like, all these different workshops, like, we're at the core of what we do is performance training. And in this sense, like, performance is just literally anything that can help you become better. And whether it be through movement, whether it be through being a part of a community that all has growth mindset people training there, and through nutrition or whatever it might be. But I think having that facility where everybody feels comfortable and taking fitness and their experiences kind of to a deeper level.
It's one of the places where I feel most at home as a coach, a student, and you know slash athlete. Mm-hmm. Because I was always getting in trouble as a coach, taking my shoes off and walking around in my socks at a proper gym. Like, my managers and the owners would be like, dude, you're walking around with your clients with their socks on and you're doing handstands on the walls and stuff. Like, we can't be doing that here. And I'm like, I feel like I didn't feel at home at a lot of gyms. Lucky I'm at a place now that they let me, the owner, when he built the gym, he let me set up a gymnastics kind of area. It's not exactly where I want it to be. It's not no Nirvana. The flooring is really hard, so you can't do any really barefoot stuff, but we have like the monkey bars, and we've got a lot of P bars, and the tall gymnastic P bars, the long ones, what are they called?
The parallel bars.
So it's getting there, but it's not no Nirvana. And one thing I got really excited about is coming in Nirvana the first time. I walk in and the person at the front desk was like, oh, we don't do shoes. And I was like, thank God. And you step on a blue floor and you've got this kind of gymnastics hybrid floor going on there. Mm-hmm. And you feel like your body is already having positive effects by just stepping inside. Like, as soon as we get 15 minutes into a class and I'm sweating from head to toe and all my muscles are activated and I haven't done any push-ups or any like bench press or squats or anything, it's very different movements, like stretching and warming up and stuff, which is really cool. And when you walk into Nirvana, you see like rings hanging and you've got the metal bars on the side. What do you call them?
The stall bars.
The stall bars on the side. And then you've got the high pull-up bars. And at the back, just to mix it up a bit more, you don't just have a lot of flexible, mobile people. You've got people doing Olympic lifting and powerlifting. Yeah. And it's like you're doing a class and there's someone in the background, like a chick from like Europe, is just like overhead snatching more than what I could. And like, there's just a lot of beefs. But the thing that really, really made me feel comfortable and really keep my anxiety or any of my stress really low is you don't have like crazy music playing while you're training. And you don't have to do that, like, you know, that fake hype up thing that people do. And being in a lot of companies that I work for, they say to me when I rock up, okay, I want you yelling, I want you hyping, I want everyone high-fiving, sucking bums, I want everyone to be high energy. And I'm like, that's cool for a one-day event, but I don't know if you could do that every day at a gym.
No, it's different. I mean, it's really difficult to, I mean, most people can barely, understand the super basics of what's happening with their bodies. But when you have so much external, like, noise being thrown at you and you have, like, all these other things going on, like, how do you expect anybody to actually, move properly and actually understand, like, what they're doing? I think you can ask someone to... I mean, we could tell someone to do something, 10 different people to do something, but they'll all do it in a slightly different way because their understanding of the movement is not fully there. I think Devin does a great job of explaining to people that it's not just about position acquisition. Like, you're just not trying to just mindlessly do the movement, but you need to be aware of like what the hell is going on with your body. And I think it happens a lot in the fitness industry where people are just like, all right, guys, let's do 1,000 squats. And it's just like, well, what are we doing 1,000 squats for? What's the purpose? Are we actually using our body in the proper way? And then Devin could definitely talk more about like his particular practice. But I mean, you can see from his Instagram account, like the mobility and strength he has in his legs when he's doing like the dragon squats and the shrimp squats and that stuff. Like,
why,
like, there's not, I mean, that's just such a small percentage of people that can even get to half of what he's doing, and he's just able to take everything to, like, that next level, and a lot of it is just, a lot of it starts with his mindset and where he's taking everything from, so definitely huge respect for what he's doing.
The thing that I really wanted to ask, like, what I'm recording a lot of these podcasts for is for the people, but for this particular one, and I think a lot of people will agree on me, is, like, I want to dive into, like, what was the moment you left maybe it was when you're younger, I don't know you very well, but what was the moment you left from where I am at the moment, where I'm kind of stuck in between, like, I'm doing exercising and fitness and stuff, but I still get stuck into going back to the movements that I shouldn't be doing. Like, I still get stuck into doing stuff that's going to make me look muscular, but not actually be better as a human.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
I follow.
Like, it's better, anyone who's listening to this, it's better to do a bench press than not do a bench press. but it's to the point where it's like, is there a better movement, or you know, are you sure, are your shoulders forward rotated, and maybe there's something else you need to do. And like, I want to know, when was that shift in your life where you went more based on like movement, and like you look like a, you know, you look like a bodybuilder or like a fitness guy yourself. You've got lots of muscle, dense, lean, but like the movements you do and what I see, it looks like you spent time going back with, like going back to the movement first before you went to the visual side.
Yeah, that's, I think the first part of your question is really gets to the heart of that shift. You said like you find yourself going back to movements that you know probably are not, is not working that well for you, but you do it just because blah, 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 blah. That blah, 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 that's where that answer is for me. So I think the shift for me happened mostly in a particular mindset that happened through, I mean, I guess you could call it mindfulness practice. I call it psychology. So most people are approaching their movement practice, as with their diet, as with their relationships, from a space of fear narratives.
Absolutely. I don't want to be fat. Or yeah. I don't, like, the doctor told me, or my trainer told me that my posture's shit. Like, so I have to do this, otherwise yeah. I'll be like this. Not, I'm passionate about getting to a deeper level of movement. It's more like fear.
Sure. And just, you know, and that's true across the board, not just with fitness behavior. So, like, most people are allowing most of their behavior to be governed by motives that are surrounding these fear narratives, like being like, so they're doing behaviors or not doing behaviors because they're afraid that doing something or not doing something will mean that they're either bad in some way, like defective, something wrong with them, they'll be alone, so they'll be isolated in some way, or they'll be in danger, they won't be safe. And these three kind of fear narratives that form around self-perception and identity end up fueling most people's behavior around these practices. And so that shift for me happened when I started to develop this mindfulness practice, and I realized, okay, I have an opportunity now to observe in any given moment where my motives are coming from when I'm doing a particular movement, or when I select an exercise to do. Why am I doing that, and where is that coming from? And then also see all those consequences of that motive laid out before me. Okay, if I believe this is true about myself, and if I subscribe to this motive for behavior, then I have to also accept A, B, and C as the side effects of that narrative. And when you see all that laid out before you, or at least for me, when I see all that laid out before me, I can generally, the answer for me is no, I don't want to subscribe to that narrative anymore. I don't want to be in continual reaction to fear narratives. I would rather go over here and create this thing that I want to create. And so the question now changes away from, what am I afraid of is true, what am I afraid might be true if I do or don't do this thing. Now it changes to, what do I want to create, and what is the best way to do that? And so what is the best way to do that? Well, that's where you get the answers, like the kind of movements that I'm practicing now. What is the best, most efficient way to create mobility and strength? Now it's an open question that I can explore that creatively, instead of just worrying about, I'm going to lose delt size, or what if I don't do this today? I'm going to, you know, I might lose flexibility or something.
And I mean, that fits in with changing people's mindset and to focus more on the long game, on the long term, right? The longevity is, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like an example would be like, if you asked most people, would they want to live until like 100 years old? And there's actually a lot of people that probably say no, just because their idea of what a 100-year-old person is,
yeah, wheelchair,
bedridden, not active, cannot do anything, and it's very dependent on their friends, family, whatever, to survive and to live. But if you actually had someone who was 120 years old and was like still doing handstands and still hiking mountains and still like super active, like that would be a person that, you know, I would want to aspire to, you know. But we end up focusing so much on the short term. You can see it in the way people do their diets with regards to nutrition, trying to lose weight, the way they exercise, where they just focus on just purely aesthetics, which, you know, for sure, like, there's times where, you know, training for aesthetics will help you with a bit for performance, but the transfer is not really there as much if you were to focus on the longevity, focus on your actual abilities to use your body, and then the aesthetics end up being kind of just a byproduct. I mean,
right.
Devin focuses on his mobility, strength, flexibility, his movement. And if you look at his Instagram, like he's jacked, you know, and he's not really waking up in the morning. I mean, maybe he's waking up in the morning just like feeling his abs. He's like, oh, I got a nice abs, but
I don't focus on his abs at all. It's not
but,
a
yeah, but the aesthetics end up being a byproduct of his training, which is what it should be.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, I look at gymnastics and the guys at the Olympics, or even any of the like the Chinese and the people that are really committed to the old school gymnastics, where it's like train 4 or 5 hours, but do it at a less intensity and less effort, and it's kind of like the old Russian wrestlers. They always beat the Americans for years because they trained easier when they did their jiu-jitsu and wrestling with each other, and they got more hours in but less intensity, they got less injuries. And the Americans tried to just train harder. That's something that my MMA coach taught me, and it's still hard because you go to jiu-jitsu. I mean, if you've ever done jiu-jitsu before, the newer you are, usually when you wrestle someone who's new, you end up looking like you're just sweating and rolling like crazy. And the people that are black belts are like slowly going through the movements, and that's what I relate a lot to with movement practice, calisthenics, gymnastics, movement. And I kind of hate that people are trying to label their fitness pages or their, like, I know that it's good to have like a niche, like, okay, I'm a calisthenics guy, I sell calisthenics programs, but it's hard because when I was thinking in my head that I started calisthenics, I was always trying to jump from bar to bar and spin, and I had so much joint pain and a lot of problems and injuries because I wasn't doing the slow, smooth mobility stuff because it doesn't look so flash on Instagram. Mm. And that's what I've noticed, back to what you were saying, Ian, like, people aren't really looking into the future and looking for long term, because psychologically we've been tuned in from the best psychologists are hired by Instagram and Facebook and stuff to make sure we are keeping our eyes on our phone and make sure that we're dialed in on social media. And the more time we spend on there, the more money they make from ads. And that's also giving us a short term kind of attitude. We want, you know, the likes, we want the gratification, and we want the love and the attention. It's very short term. Like, even with the new version of Instagram, it's like your post has to do well in the first hour, otherwise it doesn't do well. So we're just getting tuned and tuned more for this short term. And walking and speaking to people like yourselves, it makes me really, like, from these interviews and these chats, it's not just for the podcast, but it's for me to also go home and write down in my notes, you know, the things that we spoke about and really practice on that as well. And I was also really surprised, like, this is the first time I've met Devin face to face, and I was surprised that he looked very muscular. And if no one told me and I seen him walking, I would think that he did a bodybuilding routine. But like, yeah, like check his page, check out Nirvana Strength, check out Devin's page, and we'll let everyone know the pages at the end. But yeah, you'll see that, you know, what both these guys look like are strong, strong guys, but then also working on flexibility and mobility. I want to go back to like the points in both of you guys' lives where that shift happened. Now I know the psychology of the shift. I want to know like the age, because I'm at that shift at the moment where I learned how to handstand, and then I went backwards a little bit, and I got into gymnastics a little bit, and now I'm doing surfing, MMA, and still doing a little bit of bodybuilding. And I'm kind of like, I'm splitting myself into all different places and not getting the most out of it. So I want to know like what age, like, how long did it take you to get this flexible and strong and mobile?
So I guess the shift, that part of the shift would be characterized, I guess, maybe 3 years ago, 2.5, 3 years ago, when I transitioned from practicing almost exclusively yoga asana, to now what is a multifaceted, multidisciplined practice. But I went in pretty hard and heavy. Not everybody would want to practice, you know, 5, 6, 7 hours a day to get that kind of progress. And I also made a lot of mistakes on that path as well. Like, I went too far, and I mean, that's part of leading from the front, I guess, and being a responsible coach. I don't teach anything anymore that I don't do myself to an excess, you know, just so I can see where the edges are. But
Are you more muscular now than before when you're just doing yoga, obviously?
Oh God, yeah. I mean, because I'm
doing
resistance.
Do you still have posts of when you were doing yoga on your page?
Yes, yeah. If you look back, you can see, I mean,
I was... before and after photo or something.
I did at one point. It blew up and people went nuts over it because I just posted the facts. I was like, here I was, vegan and doing only yoga asana, and here I am now, meeting a lot of meat. And
I love hearing you say that, because my podcast listeners know me well. Like, I've coached vegan athletes, and I've got nothing wrong with vegans, but I do have something wrong with if they try to tell people who eat meat that it's unhealthy to eat meat, or that they can still put on a lot of muscle. And like, they can do what they want to do, but to try to push it onto people who are. And I always put up videos on my Instagram, like holding massive steaks in my hand and like eating this. I go for a surf in the morning. I pre-cook a steak the night before. I go for a surf in the morning. I take a steak in a sandwich bag, like a steel bag, and I put it on the front seat of my car and let it heat up. Like, it's already cooked, but I let it heat up while I'm surfing. And I jump in my car and I eat it basically warm on my way to work. And that's what I eat nearly every single morning. And that's what I felt my body at its best. Like, kind of like the keto carnivore, but then I introduce vegetables, I introduce carbohydrates, and I don't want to restrict myself from pretty much anything at the moment. So we know that it was about about 3 years ago you were doing yoga. What age did you, like, when you were back in America, and like, what age, what were you doing in high school? Were you doing movement? Were you playing a sport? Like, where did this kind of athlete coach mindset come from?
Yeah, my experience as an athlete started early. I was first playing soccer from a really young age, since I was, I don't know, 5 or 8 years old. And then I ran track very seriously. Track was the first sport that I actually took really seriously, personally. And I took it very personally. Like, I was highly invested in it, and I wanted to go to the Olympics. I wanted to qualify for London. Didn't end up happening, obviously. But I ran through college. Yeah, all the way through college. I was 400, 800 meter athlete. 400, 800.
Yeah.
So middle distance, and...
I was the same. Not as good, nowhere near as good, but I also grew up in a kind of single mother family. We didn't have much. Mum couldn't even afford to like pay for me to go and get a coach or whatever. I wouldn't train all year, and then I'd come top three at all running events, all nearly every athletic event, except for anything that was like strength-based, like shot put and stuff, because I was 55 kilos in grade 12 at 17.
Mm.
And I was doing boxing just because I was an angry kid with no father. So like, that was kind of like my background. But yeah, I ran, my best was probably between 400 and 800. I just didn't really lose energy. I just cruised. I didn't find it very hard. I like, 1 year's a video of me with my, like, with an Australian flag on, and I'm laughing, and I ran in at the start. I didn't even put my name down to do it. Like, I ran in from the crowd as they blew the whistle or banged the little gun, and I ran in behind people and run the race against everyone who was serious, warming up and had their like running shoes on and stuff. So I was just like a little crazy kid that was like a bit of a bad boy. But yeah, it's cool to hear that. So, you know, you were in track and you did sports like that, and then when did you get into yoga?
Yeah, directly after that, as soon as I quit track, pretty much. That's when I found yoga. I was studying philosophy at the time in university, philosophy and psychology.
Yeah.
And I found the prospect, or the idea anyway, of the yoga practice interesting, because it was...
the opposite of kind of like...
Yeah, it was purportedly a practice, you know, it was ostensibly, I should say, a practice of physical movement that wasn't focused on the physical outcome. It was supposed to be focused on kind of like using the physical aspect of the practice as a medium for self-inquiry and self-study. And I think, okay, well, that's amazing. You know, that's kind of what I was up to in philosophy, except it was missing the physical practice. I wanted that deep existential exploration, but integrating that into a physical practice seemed fascinating. So I went all in on yoga for, you know, six years.
What you were doing beforehand was physical, so physical, like, to get better at track, you do a lot of track. There's not a lot of time you sit down with theory. Obviously, you go through techniques and stuff, but a lot of time you just run different efforts of track. Like,
yeah, and the goal was always just go faster.
Yeah.
That's it.
And with yoga, it's go slower.
Well, yeah. I guess pace is one medium for exploring certain aspects, but yeah, it was kind of two opposite ends of the spectrum. It was like purely physical goal-oriented practice, and then into philosophy, which is purely cerebral. It's just thinking about thinking, essentially. And then in trying to integrate the two in through yoga, and finding that it just wasn't executed very well in most methodologies that I found. So then moving on to just other disciplines to try to find that, to try to do that integration on my own.
So as an overview, it was like a bit of soccer, or what they call in England, football.
Football, yeah.
Into track, really put effort into track. You know, you would have been very competitive all the way through college. You were studying psychology,
philosophy,
and then moved into yoga for 6 years, which brought you to China.
Yep.
And then you decided, look, this is something missing. Like, you feel like you could get stronger while being even more mobile if you use the muscles to get the range.
Yeah, it was more like this. Like, okay, I'm doing a physical practice. The goal might not be the physical, right, in yoga. Maybe that's not the point, and maybe I should be using it as a means to explore myself. But there is a physical protocol that we're following, and there are prescriptions that are being made by teachers. And I'm repeating certain movements and doing certain things. So if I'm going to be doing that, I might as well choose the methodology that is actually doing what it purports to be doing.
This is exactly what I go through in yoga, yeah. And I get in trouble by teachers. I do Bikram.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 52 poses.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
90 minutes. Yeah. And it's always hot. I always do hot. I can't really do normal temperature yoga because I've got fibromyalgia and I get really joint pain. So the heat is really good. The heat shock proteins.
Yeah.
Just like always, Joe Rogan always talks about the heat shock proteins and what they do. I really enjoy it. I think even if I didn't even do the yoga, if I just laid in the heat, it would be good, but I get bored. I've got ADD from a young age, so doing the movement's good. But the problem I'm getting to is, as a coach and someone who's always gone outside the box and outside the circle, I'm getting in trouble because I'm changing the postures, I'm changing the movements in the class, and the lady will be like, Jackson, like, we're doing Bikram, so we're going to do Bikram together. And I'm like, well, I think this is better what I'm doing. And then she's like, well, if you want to do Bikram with us, you must do Bikram. And I'm like, I need more of this for my mobility. Like, my chest is tight, so even though you're doing all forward bends, I need to do this, etc. So hearing that from you, it's like a little thing went off in my head. And I'm like, I'm just so happy other people can feel like that. And I think it takes a certain type of person. So it's really interesting, and I think the listeners would really love that. Now, with Ian, like, what did you used to do? Like, you're a very strong, muscular guy. Like, what did you do when you were younger? What about through school?
Yeah, I was always, I mean, being from the States, like, we're all big into team sports. My number one sport was just American football.
And, gridiron.
Yeah, gridiron. So, you know, I have always been the strongest guy on my team. You know, even in high school, I bench pressed 370 pounds, and my back squat was like 600 pounds. And I was like 17 years old at that time, and I was still running like a 4.7 40 yard dash is what the and that was at about 90. I was like 90 kilos at that time. And then
how old were you then?
17 18.
So you were 90 kilos and we're around the same height, I think.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I think we're similar height, and I was 58 kilos.
That's tiny, dude.
That's so small. But then I went to play gridiron in university, and so at that time I was like, well, I'm not strong enough, I'm not fast enough, I'm not big enough. So then it was like, okay, how do I put on more weight? So then I ballooned up to, my max was 110 kilos I weighed, so I was legitimately like double your size. But
and
time,
what's your height? Do you know your height in centimeters?
173.
Yeah, we're the exact same height.
Yeah, so it was 173, 110 kilos.
Did your ankles hurt?
No.
Just,
no,
the muscles were strong. Yeah.
Well, then, so I even increased my strength. So I went from, so then I was at 110 kilos, and I was at 190 kilogram bench press, a 300 kilo back squat, and I was, my power clean was, I mean, it was the worst technique in the world, but
it got there.
I could power clean 185, like super easy. And it just never, you know, it's all about, football is all about just bigger, stronger, faster.
They don't care. They don't care about how long you last run the sport.
Not really, no.
No longevity in there.
No, not
really.
Money,
money, money.
Yeah. So that was a big thing. I mean, once football finished, then I went all the way back down to 95 kilos. I'd stopped lifting as heavy. But for me, I was a quite unhealthy lifestyle. Like, I just ate a lot. My dad's side of the family is very, has a history of like alcohol abuse. So
same, actually.
I drank a lot. I would just never drink by myself. So I would, if I went out drinking with friends, I would drink a lot. And I kind of carried over to, then I moved to Korea, and I just taught English, and then eventually I became an English professor, and that allowed me more time to do the things that I actually really want to do. Because, you know, like, most people, when they think about their jobs, is or they want the idea of like freedom. It's not necessarily like just freedom from doing nothing, but freedom to do what they're really passionate about. And so that job allowed me to do that, and that was definitely a big lead into progressing more into the fitness industry. So I went from strength conditioning to eventually I progressed to doing more body composition, coaching and training. And then with our focus with body composition was always more about behavioral change. So I think it helped as opposed to getting into that scene and just be purely focused on the aesthetics. Then that kind of helped spark my interest into doing more fitness and health and nutrition. And I did my first bodybuilding competition just for experience.
That's the thing I was going to ask you next.
I felt amazing about a month out, and then on stage I felt absolutely horrible. Same. I felt just so weak. It looked amazing, but just felt the worst I've ever felt in my life. And so that was a big change. So then I started focusing more on like, okay, how do I actually work on performance and focus on that? And so I started doing it focused on using just weights because that's all I really knew. And then it was like maybe 3 years ago, where I started moving, getting into movement. And so I'm coming from, I've always been super tight, super just strong, and so a slightly different beginnings than Devin. I wish I had the flexibility part, because that part takes, like now strength is just super easy. But the thing is like once you, and this is where it will help in your practice, is like when you're trying to make the transition, right? So like if you're trying to go from 100 kilos to 150 kilos on your bench, or go from, you know, you can barely spread your legs to going a full middle split, it's, you know, if you can, once eventually you get to your middle split or you get to 150 kilos, it's relatively, doesn't take as much energy to maintain it.
Yeah, I think it's similar to people, I suppose, go on my, you know, my social media is mostly known for just like body image. I definitely use my powers of having a good physique to build an audience, and then once I have an audience, now I'm living the life that I want to live, and I'm traveling a bit more, and I'm still a coach, and I still coach part time, and I'm really passionate about it. But the problem with coaching is I would burn out, and I couldn't give each client my attention if I did 10 sessions a day. So I didn't want to lie to myself and say that I'm being my best coach if I had a way of building a social media and still being a coach on the side. What I like hearing about both of those is I had this in my head that both of you have been doing the exact style training he's been doing for like at least 5 to 6 years to be able to get to where you are, but you've both come from opposite spectrums and then meet in the middle. And I think the one thing that's very similar between both of you and that I'm working on now is the mindset. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's plenty of people that have like flexibility from doing something or have strength, but it might just take that little spark in the mind to be like, how do we join both of them together and prove to people that it can be done? Because I still have this fighting thing in the one side of my brain, like the devil saying like, you know, like you need to do bench press and you need to do like gym training if you want to maintain a certain look, and that's what you're known for a few years ago, and like, you know, to get the likes, to get the, build the audience that you want to build. Like, to be honest, it's not about the likes for me, but I know that the likes is kind of like how many houses I'm building as a builder. You know what I mean? Like, it's building the audience.
But I think it's something very similar to like with, like, let's say like Devin, if someone just like looks at his Instagram account and immediately they see him like doing like an amazing movement. And that, I mean, same idea is like, they might see your page and see, wow, this guy's got amazing physique. But that draws them into that initial, meeting point, right? So like, I see his page, I see something amazing, like, wow, this is amazing. Now I can start delving deeper into his captions and then getting more understanding of like what he is doing to accomplish these things. And so there is, of course, with anything with regards to like marketing or selling, is like you gotta have a specific point. It's hard to, I think, to, if someone is not interested in movement in general, and they just don't have any experience, they don't even know what movement is. If Devin just right away just started talking about like all his philosophy and all the really deep stuff, like with how short of attention span like a lot of people have, it's like
the net would be smaller.
Yeah, it'd be a little bit difficult to get people to
especially on the biggest platform of today, which is Instagram at the moment. Yeah. I don't know how long it's going to last for, but since I got into Instagram and it blew up, I got to the point where before I even knew what I was really doing, I had over 100,000 followers back when 100,000 meant like you were basically locally famous or, you know, Instagram famous or whatnot. Now it's like all over the place. It's hard to really see what's real and what's not. But I had that at a very, at an early stage. And it gave me kind of like this, it was a short, very short-term thing. It was very like, oh, how well did the post do? And all like, you need to work. Like the post with your abs, it looked better with the better angle. You got more comments and you sold more programs. So your success is actually characterized towards your visuals. So it left me down this road of like obsessively doing competitions. I did like nine fitness competitions over 2 years. And I spent, I think, 6 months doing competitions back to back and end up in hospital in Hollywood. I did the North American WBFF. I nearly died. The guy said that I had an allergic reaction to diuretics, and I was taking things that I shouldn't have been taking, but everyone else at these comps were, like this is big boy stuff. But I was also being paid by sponsors and stuff to do well at that comp, and I knew that if I did well there, it would open opportunities for me to build a brand. But it was the day that I was laying in that bed in Los Angeles, cold, so cold, with like IV bag attached to me. And so the doctor said, you would have started fitting soon. You were like close to, death. And he said to me, like, really look after yourself. And like, this is a big wake up call. And it really did wake me up. And that's when I started traveling more, and I worried less about my physique. But I also figured out that having a good physique in some ways is also related to health. So I figured out, how can I realize that the reason why as humans we are attracted to people that have six pack or that have toned body or whatnot is because in the primal days that would have been the hunters.
Yeah.
That would have been the women that foraged better, and they were, the providers, and they weren't lazy. But we've taken it to an extreme where there's drugs involved, or not just drugs, not even that. I mean, it's just extremes. Like people think that 5% body fat, like on the front of a magazine, is something that you can walk around at. And genetically some people you meet can be like that. You'll meet some people that come into your class and they're so lean. And then you meet people that just hold more body fat. So I had to figure out, like, where is my happy medium and how can I be healthy? But I'm still every day having to, if I don't do the yoga practice when I'm back home in Australia, if I don't, come to a place like Nirvana, if I don't speak to people and surround myself with people like yourself, if I fall into the bodybuilding guys that are on the Instagram and looking at that, it subconsciously puts me more towards that. So I think it's just a circle. And did you find that, Devin, did you find that, while you're in China, and I think this is a question for both of you, is like, I think the part of the story that really shifted for Ian was like taking himself away from America. Because he was known as the football guy. So by taking himself away from there, he can be himself or be a new version of himself or what he's passionate about. Is that similar to going to China? Like there was no kind of pressure from the outside to have a certain look?
There still was. I mean, like, especially in China, the yoga market there is extremely superficial. So if you teach in a certain way, you get people what they want: fast flows, pop music, exciting atmosphere.
And in Asia, it helps being a white person, right? Like, I mean, there's a huge draw for, at least it's like that in Korea, like, where they're like, oh my god, it's a white person teaching a class, like, go.
Yeah, and so there are certain pressures to be a certain way, but in another sense, what you say is true, because being in China was extremely isolating for me, because there's really nobody there relating to what I'm doing on a deeper level. So I felt more or less for, the better part of this 3-year journey that I spoke about. I mean, I was in China for longer than that, but for 3 years I was living in the mountains in a very rural area, away from cities, away from people who were really speaking English, essentially isolated with a lot of time to just look at myself and what
you did,
I'm...
You did a 3-year Shavasana, what's it called?
Vipassana.
Vipassana?
Yeah.
The 3-year version.
Yeah, and during that time, it's just me, myself, and I'm having to confront, like, why am I marketing my workshop in this way, or why am I posting in this way, what am I spending my time on, and all that is sort of amplified in this isolated environment, and I'm just continually looking at myself, and it was... And it literally pretty much no friends at all around me for those 3 years. Just me and my girlfriend and my two dogs, and which we actually only got a year ago. And so when I started to look at that, you know, I thought the same thing that you described. I was like, there was, you know, we're all doing that. We're trying to figure out, like, okay, what if I tweak this or do that or turn my abs this way? Like, what, how does that translate into more attention or more followers? And how does that convert into money? And how does that convert into capacity to influence people? I started to realize that the reason I felt so much existential angst in my workshops, like, why was I feeling so upset and dissatisfied every time I left a workshop? Like, these people are not understanding me. They're not meeting me where I am. I'm saying the right things when I'm marketing my workshops. Why are they not listening? Why are they not have a capacity to listen? It's because I was doing a bait and switch. Like, I was marketing myself with image, with aesthetic, with body image, with impressive movements and flows, and only under the surface was I then offering some kind of deeper insight. But I was marketing using the image still, and so people would show up for the wrong reasons. So I was getting all these followers, getting all this attention, showing up at these events, and yet still felt empty. When I finally started to become aware of those motives and let some of that behavior go, and started to become essentially what is ruthless in my just straightforwardness, and I'm not compromising at all, and only candid videos of my practice, and there's no bullshit at all anymore. Like, what happened was I did lose a lot of followers, also gained some, but lost a lot of attention, offended a lot of people with my, you know, quote, straight talk, however you want to put it. But the people who were now coming to my account and looking at my stuff were much more prepared for my actual message, and they weren't confused and misled by my marketing approach. Now my following is growing far less quickly than it was when I was posting pretty images. My page is ugly at this point. There's no aesthetic at all. It's just videos of me practicing and, like, wherever I find myself practicing. But I find that when people leave my workshops, for example, at Nirvana, when I did my most recent workshop, 2 days, now the feedback that I'm getting from people and the things that people are telling me about what they took away from the workshop actually matches what I think that I'm giving people, actually matches what I think I'm putting out there, which is way more valuable than anything I could ever imagine. Like, if I died with 10 million Instagram followers, but nobody was understanding my message, I would feel regret. But if I had, you know, 1,000 Instagram followers, but the people who came to my events all said, wow, that was life-changing, thank you, and their feedback matched what in my head I thought I was giving them, that would be a satisfying life for me. So I had to grapple with those kind of, like, deeper existential questions when I was kind of isolated in China, and, like, think, like, why am I doing this, and what am I actually looking to get out of this? What do I value in priority in terms of my highest values in my life? What would I regret when I die? That kind of stuff.
That's deep. How old are you?
I'm 30 now.
Are you 30? Yeah. Still, like, there's a lot of people that I meet. I've got friends that are 28, 29, 30, around those age, you know. I'm 27.
Mm-hmm.
You know, around that, I usually hang out with guys that are more mature and older, but even then, a lot of them, they're still struggling with addictions, like, different. You know, it might be sex, it might be attention, it might be gambling, it might be drugs, alcohol, it might just be addicted to making money, but then not knowing how to use it. A lot of them don't even know how to fathom what you've just said. And I think a lot of listeners will have to go back and listen to a lot of things that you say a few times, because it doesn't feel like I'm speaking to, like, an everyday person. It feels like I'm speaking to someone who's really, again, not just studied philosophy, but practiced in movement-based philosophy as well, and then lived being away and living where you lived. I always have this in my head where I tell myself, like, I'm going to go away and I'm going to do a 6 months away, and then I end up in Bali at Finn's Beach Club. It's like, that's not me going away.
I think the hard thing for a lot of people, I mean, most of us wouldn't have the opportunity to be in a situation where we're isolated and we can still kind of survive. We're all, like, for me, living in Seoul, Korea, with, you know, it's one of the few mega cities in the world, and, like, I was practicing this, like, movement inside of a massive CrossFit gym where not a single person really would want to do what I'm doing. And if there was somebody who showed a little bit of interest, sure, I would want to bring them along. But most people are in an environment where it doesn't really matter what exactly they want to do. They're under so much, like, external pressure, external stress to assimilate to what the normal is for them, right? So, like, how hard would it be for someone to be like, no, I need to take an hour to go train, and you've got 10 of your closest friends saying, no, we gotta go out and drink. Mm-hmm. And are people willing to essentially like even go as far as like shedding people from their lives that maybe not be healthy for them, you know? One of the really interesting experiences that I had with the bodybuilding competition was that I knew that if I went out, I would drink, so I would just never go out. But I would still want to meet the friends that I had, the supposed friends that I had, and there were so many of them that they would only meet in the context of going out for drinks. So then I found out real quick like who were people that were like would really just meet me for coffee and just have an actual conversation, and those that would only meet me to go out drinking. And then, you know, it more than halved like the friends that I supposedly had.
And a lot of those people, it's not that they don't want to meet you, it's that they don't know what to say when they're not drinking.
That's part of it too, you know. And some people, and a lot of it's timing as well, you know, like some people are just not ready to make the changes. Some of them might not know what kind of changes they need. They might not know what else is out there. They might, you know, you could have someone who's like, is like your best friend in the world, but they, instead of supporting the change that you want to make, they start questioning like the change you want to make. And
it's not only people though, isn't it? It's like, it's also expenditure of resources and time. Like,
yeah.
When I think about like, because we're always making an investment in something, I mean, with whatever we're doing. And so like, for example, when I started living in that rural area of China, I was paying like $93 US a month for rent.
That gave you a lot more options.
Yeah, and you know, ordering meat online through Taobao, which is like Chinese Amazon or eBay, and like, you know, having it shipped from Inner Mongolia, cooking, you know, sometimes my meals cost less than $1, you know?
Yeah.
And so that allocation of resources allowed me to then not spend as much money, and that allowed me to then spend less time working, and that allowed me to spend more time focused on research, practice, self-development, inquiry. But are people willing to shed those expenses? Do they want to give up living in that fancy house or driving the fancy car, the fancy motorbike? Do they want to give up living in an expensive area? You know, the social interaction that comes with that and the networking that comes with that. Do they want to give up? That's the question. Do they want to give up? Do they want to give up? Do they want to give up? Is it worth it? Ito talks about this a lot. Ito Portal is sacrifice.
Yeah.
Look at my hands. My hands are scarred with my sacrifice from the last 3 years of training. You know, I've been through multiple joint injuries trying to figure it out. And I just think most people don't know what's important enough to them to make those kind of sacrifices. They haven't made that direct connection. Like, this is the thing that I want the most in my life before I die. If you can make that direct connection to something, then most people are willing to make the sacrifice if they can make that connection over and over again.
It's tough as an adult, because I mean, as kids, we're already immediately like bombarded with like, what are we supposed to be doing as we grow up? America has the American dream, right? It's not as prevalent as it used to be, but the idea that you should strive to have, to get married, have a house, 2.5 kids, and like that's the end of your life, right? Like, if you can get that, then you're successful. But now it's like, I mean, especially with the way like social media and all that stuff is now, it's like bombarded with so much information at such a young age. It's like, it's hard to make a decision, and it's hard to, when you have 100 people telling you what you should be doing and where you should be going, you know, can that person even get to a point where they can actually listen to their thoughts and listen to, I mean, any aspect of what they would want to do? So I do find that Bali is a very interesting place where people, basically just being here, they're able to shed so much of that external noise. They're able to meet people like yourself, Jackson, like Devin, and you know, just be around people that are able to think about their lives in more of a meaningful way, instead of just being like, hey, you watched Jersey Shore the other night.
Yeah. I met a really nice New Zealand guy, a Maori guy from at Armo's bar. You know, the daily thing for me was to go to Motion Cafe, then go to Armo's bar, do an ice bar, sauna. I felt like I was really rewarding myself, and it was just the where I wanted to be when I was living here for a short time. And then finding Nirvana as well, it just really blew my mind, and I'm like, I really wanted to live over here, but I realized really quickly that that I was running away from something back home, so I had to sort that out first. But meeting this guy at Armo's bar, now I'm doing an event with beside Lorna Jane, like the multi-million dollar clothing chick. Not Lorna Jane, Ashley Bynes. Which is, again, multi-million dollar brand, you know, boot camp, stuff like that. She's one of the most successful females in Australia. So I met this guy at a sauna. We spoke. He didn't know who I was. We had a really good, deep, and meaningful chat, similar to this. It's about more just about, like, you know, what my ideas of life and how I've really given up. Nice, flashy. I used to have, like, a little racy car, and I had, like, a shoe wall. I had 50, 60 pairs of Nikes and Adidas because I was a trainer. So I was like, I've got to have all the best shoes because that's what I wear every day. The watches, like fake watches, gold stuff. I got rid of all that, and now I have a soccer mom's car, like a Volkswagen, and I just kind of, and I really just stick to like really basic stuff, and I really just enjoy that. And from that, he's invited me. I'm doing this women's empowering event. I'm running the morning training session. So again, that's exactly, that's a perfect opportunity, like in Bali, to meet people that really blow you away. Before we finish up, I want to know more about how did you get from Ian? How did you get from Korea to Bali, and then I want to know more about how did Nirvana start? And it's a really big facility. It's one of the biggest facilities I've been to in Bali, and one of the biggest facilities I've been to that's successful for movement. And like, how did that come about?
I think, you know, the movement culture has, there's a lot of people that have been kind of responsible for helping build up the scene. You know, Ido Portel, you've got Tim Ferriss when he did his podcast with Gymnastic Bodies, Christopher Summer. Then you got, I think if we would have started our facility, you know, a year before, so 2 years ago, I feel like at that time, it would have completely failed because I didn't feel like the market was really ready for it, a big facility like that. Most of the calisthenics market now is basically just all online. People are doing these movements by themselves. There's not really like gyms to actually go to. Perth is a really cool scene now. They've got a lot of gyms that are popping up there.
Oversaturated even.
Yeah, but there's so many big markets where there's no facility to do anything. For me, it made sense to find a place that would ideally affect the most amount of people from all over the world. Because Bali is just such an amazing like tourist destination, and when it came to, and I do research on the wellness tourism industry, so like there's like these reports they put out every year, and it talks about like where the fastest growing areas. So Asia is one of the fastest growing areas. Wellness tourism is the fastest growing sector of tourism, and then you get into like more specifics, and like Canggu, Bali is like one of the fastest growing areas with regards to this entire industry, and
definitely has some of the best cafes in the world.
Yeah, it's quite amazing.
The most cafes,
and it's not just the gym itself, right? It's like the infrastructure. Like, there's so many restaurants with amazing like healthy foods, and then there's like so many people that are similar mindset coming here and wanting to live here. But that, yeah, all that stuff were different components of why we decided to do Nirvana Strength here. Then just like Nirvana Strength in general, like the name comes from, you know, this idea of Nirvana. We're all trying to progress, right? We're all looking for progress towards what we would consider our ultimate state of happiness or ultimate being or ultimate perfection, right? What that might be. And I think everybody is wanting to become a better version of themselves. There's like,
what's the motto you have on the mural?
Yeah, be like water.
Be
water, my friend.
Yeah.
And that comes from Bruce Lee, who I consider like the ultimate performance athlete, way ahead of his time in so many different realms. He didn't really, you know, before he created his own martial arts, like he was always in a constant state of process of like, he didn't really care like where things really came from. If it was like super effective, if it helped him in his practice to become to become a better individual, you know, not even just the fitness stuff, but life stuff. Like he incorporated into his life. And I think, you know, there are some good things from yoga. There are some good things from bodybuilding. There's good things that can be taken from so many different aspects of the fitness industry. The problem comes is like, is
too much of one
too thing. Much of one thing, you know, like you can, it's like the expression of like throwing the, for some of us, like throwing the baby out with the bathwater, right? Like there's, you want to keep the baby because it's a good thing, but you want to throw out all the junk, right? All the dirty stuff. So you can kind of take that kind of aspect or that thinking into, you know, almost any opportunity to learn. You can go to any workshop and there's always opportunity to learn something. You might not take everything from the workshop, but there are some very good things from very good instructors like Devin that you can incorporate to every aspect of your life. And so having Nirvana kind of being a place where all these instructors can come, you can all help educate each other, help share knowledge, share experiences, skills, whatever, you know, so I think it's good.
I think this is a really good time to wrap it up. Like, I could honestly sit here for 2 days straight and chat to you guys. Like, I'm definitely going to figure out a way we can do more episodes with each other. Even if I have to fly over here or whatnot, or we get a really good internet connection, whatever. But to wrap it up, I just want to hear, like, you know, where can people find you, Devin? Website, Instagram, or whatever your two or three most, you know, valuable things are to share.
Well, I guess most importantly, now I'm based in Bali. So if you are traveling through Bali or planning to stay here for a period, you can look me up on Instagram at Devin P. Kelly. So it's DevinPkelley. That's my Instagram tag now. And I don't have a website or anything. If you want to contact me about my psychology practice, narrative excavation, DM me on Instagram. Same with movement, though I don't teach movement remotely online. Like, I don't do online coaching for a lot of reasons. So if you want to learn from me, come through Bali, stop at Nirvana Strength, maybe check out their facility. I'll do private one-on-one lessons or group classes. Also have workshops coming up in the future, but definitely Instagram is the best space to get in touch with me, and Facebook as well. Just look me up, Devin Kelly, you'll find me.
Ian?
Yeah, just Nirvana Strength. Everything's basically Nirvana Strength. NirvanaStrength.com, Nirvana Strength on Instagram, TripAdvisor, Google.
One thing that I found with Nirvana was it has some of the best straightforward, clean website, Instagram, the branding around Nirvana, the signs in front of the gym. Everything has this very, as your marketing and your branding is similar to your practice. It's very straightforward.
Try to be, you know, I think there's been kind of like a lot of battle with regards to like hiring the marketing for a department is that marketing and sales, they want to push, right, and say like, oh, we got to do this and this so that we can get like more sales and we can get more people. And what ends up happening is that you end up building a brand or an image that doesn't fit with what you do. And so for us, it's a challenge, like growing organically and sticking with your values and your principles. But that's kind of one of the things, like if you make a decision, and if you're making a decision based off your values and your principles, you'll never have, you know, any regret in what you decide to do. I'm sure your principles and values may change over time, but you know, if you're just making just arbitrary decisions on stuff, it just doesn't make any sense.
Awesome. So for everyone who's listening, if you like this podcast, if you know anyone who could take value from it, you know, make sure you share it to them. And also, I really love it if you could chuck it up onto your story and tag Devin, tag Nirvana Strength, tag myself at Jackson JFit, and you know, like, just share this around. This is a really unique and something I've always thought about doing, a podcast on movement, but it's a voice podcast, so we have to speak about movement and all different sides of it. And I think we did it very perfectly today, and we learned a lot about I think someone's story is just as valuable as what they can do with their body, because without the story, there's no real character to it. So thanks, guys. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you on the next episode.